Welcome, friends, to The Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. In the postmodern age, in which the zeitgeist is moving more in the direction of a relative view of epistemology, metaphysics, and ethics. That is, reality is relative, as well as ethics and truth. Man hardly believes anything exists, let alone himself. In this strange world where we get lost in the electronic universe of the Matrix, again and again and again. Steve Vaughn in studio with me from the Generations Board. And today, here's a number of articles on the e-universe. Fox News, can we talk? I'm a millennial and I'm struggling with the poisonous side of social media. And you read the article and she's falling apart.
Yes.
Now, I went to social media this last weekend. I clicked on three or four different Facebook sites.
Wow.
And
so
I was horrified.
You were horrified.
I was horrified. Steve, I guess I haven't been on Facebook recently. Now, again, random sites. Don't remember everybody I was visiting, but no mention of Jesus. No mention of the Lord Jesus. I'm a little nervous. If you can go, 16 posts without Jesus. Are you with me?
Yeah.
I don't think I can go 16 hours without Jesus.
How many friends do you have?
I have 5,000 friends.
Wow.
Or something like that.
You need to go on and ignore them the way I do. Ignore my friends.
I don't know why I started the Facebook account. I guess partly to let people know what we're doing with the radio program, but we really don't do much with it.
Yeah.
So I visited these sites, and I guess what you get is you get a lot of lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life. A lot of show-offing. People are showing off this, showing off that.
People fight.
People argue. There's. Have you seen the list of the works of the flesh in Galatians 5?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much
that's
what
Facebook.
You get on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much it.
Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Yeah, it's all of that. Yeah.
Frightening. It is frightening. And so this woman is saying, I'm a millennial. I'm struggling with the poisonous side of social media. And I guess the bullying and all that, too. Is social media evil? Is it toxic? The effects I've seen on families, relationships, and churches have been just terrible. Just terrible. Now, people say, we've been doing social media for the last 3 years and everything's okay. You go 10 years. You put your family on social media for 10 years. You put your family on social media or your church family on social media for 10 years. And you come back and you will have a conversation.
There will be no conversations.
No, I don't think so.
They won't know how.
No, I don't think so. Well, I want to move on to this important article from Richard Fried. And Rod Dreher picked this up as well, an American conservative. But the psychologist Richard Fried from Medium.com did an article that's getting a lot of hits out there. It's called The Tech Industry's War on Kids. And we want to discuss this article in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast. Does the tech industry have a war on kids? And is their agenda to destroy children? That next on the Generations Broadcast.
Dads, are you intent on raising your sons to be courageous men of God, but struggling to find the time for some serious relationship building? Then we invite you to the Father-Son Retreat, this August 16th through the 19th. You'll experience the luxury of 4 days of quality time. It's just you, your son, and other dads and boys at the breathtakingly beautiful Crooked Creek Ranch nestled in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. Adventures galore await you in the mountains, along with rock-solid biblical teaching and some of the richest Christian fellowship you've ever enjoyed with men from around the country. Each year, the lives of boys and their dads are forever changed by the impact of the relationships and truth from the Father-Son Retreat. Will you make it part of your discipleship this year? Register now at www.coloradofathersun.com.
And we are back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here as we discuss this article from psychologist Richard Fried of Medium.com called The Tech Industry's War on Kids. Rod Dreher picked this up as well on the American Conservative. conservative. And the issue is persuasive technology. Steve, have you ever heard of persuasive technology?
Persuasive technology?
That's right. Persuasive technology.
No, I haven't.
Well, it's a destructive obsession with technology among teens.
I've seen that.
That's a predictable consequence of a virtually unrecognized merger between the tech industry and psychology. This alliance pairs the consumer tech industry's immense wealth with the most sophisticated psychological research, making it possible to develop social media, video games, and phones with drug-like power to seduce young users. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's basically very, very smart men, social planners, psychologists, and others that can make a lot of money off of manipulating kids using video games, social media, and phones. And they develop a drug-like power to seduce the users and to addict them to it. It's not unlike the methods used in casinos for gambling and fill in the blank.
Effectively
the same thing. Yeah. It works off the same principle, you know, the dopamine thing and
all
that.
Endorphins.
Yeah. So there's a program, though, dedicated to this at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. It's called the Stanford Persuasive Technology Lab. It was founded in 1998 by a psychologist by the name of Dr. B.J. Fogg.
Fogg.
I'm not sure this man's thinking straight.
Yeah. Look cloudy.
I'm guessing he might be a little bit in the fog on this
one.
Yes. But Mr. Fogg is a psychologist and the father of persuasive technology. That's what he does. It's a discipline which digital machines and apps, including smartphones, social media, and video games, are configured to alter human thoughts and behaviors. As the lab's website boldly proclaims, machines designed to change humans. I just see that as eerie, don't you?
That is really eerie.
Yeah, well, that's what they do.
Okay.
This is a Stanford University laboratory. Psychologist Dr. B.J. Fogg, he designs machines in order to manipulate and to change humans. That's what he does. Mr. Fogg is a psychologist, as I mentioned. He speaks openly of the ability to use smartphones and other digital devices to change our ideas and actions. Quote, we can now create machines that can change what people think and what people do, and the machines can do that autonomously. He's also called the millionaire maker because Fogg has groomed former students who have used his methods to develop technologies that now consume kids' lives. As he recently touted on his personal website, my students often do groundbreaking projects and they continue having impact in the real world after they leave Stanford. For example, Instagram has influenced the behavior of over 800 million people. The co-founder was a student of mine. Persuasive technology is a term for technology that compels you to think in a certain way without realizing that you are being manipulated. It's not dystopian science fiction. It is actually happening. Okay? Persuasive technology works by deliberately creating digital environments that users feel fulfill their basic human drives to be social or obtain goals better than real-world alternatives. And you can see how that plays into games.
Oh, yeah.
And that plays into social media. You know, I have friends. No, you really don't have friends, but it feels like you have friends.
Right.
I'm getting something accomplished with this game. No, you're actually not getting something accomplished by this game, but it feels like you're getting something accomplished. And so you're enjoying the same endorphin thing that you would experience if you were really actually doing something productive out there. So that's what these guys are training these kids to do. Kids spend countless hours in social media and video game environments in pursuits of likes, friends, game points, and levels because it's stimulating. They believe that this makes them happy. It's successful. They find it easier than doing the difficult but developmentally important activities of childhood. By the way, I have relatives that would fit this bill almost exactly. You know, not making a living at 28, 32, 38 years of age, but boy, they've got enough social media or they've got enough game playing in them to feel like they've actually accomplished something in their life. Fried says persuasive technology works well on adults, but it's especially effective on the brains of kids, which are still developing. So there's like, you know, you kind of feel the Frankenstein in this guy.
Oh, yeah.
The Dr. Frankenstein figuring out a way that he can recreate this adolescent. But it's also a kind of brain hacking. There's a burst of dopamine that just makes you feel good. It rewires user behavior and habits. Video game developer John Hobson has a PhD in behavioral and brain science, wrote a paper called Behavioral Game Design. Hobson was hired by Microsoft, where he helped lead the development of the Xbox Live, Microsoft's online gaming system. He's assisted in development of Xbox games popular with kids, including those in the Halo series. This is what Hobson says. Now listen to this. This is a quote from Hobson. Dr. Hobson who helped develop the Xbox stuff, and he says, the parents I work with simply have no idea about the immense amount of financial and psychological firepower aimed at their kids to keep them playing video games forever. Isn't that something?
Wow.
And this guy's actually admitting it.
Okay. Wow.
Another persuasive technology expert, Bill Fulton, a game designer who trained in cognitive and quantitative psychology. And another persuasive technology expert is Bill Fulton, a game designer who trained in cognitive and quantitative psychology. He started Microsoft's game user research group before founding his own consulting company. Now, Fulton says this, if game designers are calling to pull a person away from every voluntary social activity or hobby or pastime, they're going to have to engage that person at a very deep level in every possible way they can. Does that sound like somebody who's out there manipulating brains?
Oh, yeah.
And social planning for the destruction of an entire society? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is how you destroy a society. It doesn't take long to do this. The effects of all of this obvious long-term hours spent on smartphones and social media are driving teenage girls in the U.S. to experience high rates of depression, suicidal behaviors. The increase is 19% per year. That's emergency room treatment of 10 to 14-year-old girls for suicidal tendencies, up 19% per year since 2009.
Wow, that's significant.
That's what is that? That's 200% over 10 years. Well, people don't think this technology can be as dangerous as a drug. You know, there are parents out there that probably would not hand their kids a bottle of whiskey in the car keys and say, have a good time. Don't you agree? There are probably parents out there with a sense not to do
that. At least
that.
A few of those.
Yes,
yeah.
I would think so. But they think that Disney would never be a problem. This iPhone would never be a problem. Now, what were they thinking to just hand their kids Disney and the iPhone and think, oh, there's no problem with this?
Yeah.
Well, I think the reason why this is happening is because these companies are making a lot of money. And they are. These are the businesses that are doing well. This is why the, 3-4% GDP increase in the last quarter or two?
Yeah.
Because these firms are making money. This is where the jobs are. And so the companies are making money. Should Christians work these fields? I think that's a good question. Should Christians sell marijuana, realizing that some people just don't handle marijuana responsibly?
Yeah.
Now, I know there are people in these fields. There are a lot of Christians in these fields. And they are making money off of the billions upon billions of dollars that are flooding into the bread and games in the modern circuses as modern society is imploding as the Roman society imploded some 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, the same question would be, should a Christian own a liquor store?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, because you could make a lot of money.
You can make money on these things.
But is that, are you contributing more to the denigration of society by doing that?
If you knew that 98% of your clientele were handling alcohol badly.
Then yeah.
Then perhaps you should avoid doing that. Especially if you wanted to make something positive. You want to disciple nations, for example. Versus stumbling nations, you know, I would think that you would think twice before you contributed to the delinquency of those that are so addicted to Facebook or addicted to video games, for example.
Yeah, but I would say that, you know, alcohol is not inherently evil, and I don't know, right. I don't think that social media or technology is inherently evil, but there's that. They're dangerous.
Yeah, and it seems like those that are operating on the basis of making a lot of money off of people who tend to get addicted. So I think we should be aware of that the manipulation element of Facebook and these other organizations are such that their goal is to see that more and more addictions come about. As Christians, we should be very much aware of that sort of thing. More fundamentally, though, here's the question. Technology and science, without the fear of God, will most likely destroy us.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the fundamental problem, is that our young people who take the computer science classes in the pagan universities,
And those young people take the physics majors and the engineering majors in the universities are almost without exception taking these classes without the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. There isn't the worship of God in the chemistry classrooms. And this is by far the most damaging thing that American Christians are doing to themselves, especially those who teach in the schools in which there is no fear of God before their eyes. And they refuse, they absolutely refuse to acknowledge God, to fear God, to reverence God, and to worship God in American science classrooms. Now, again, I'm talking to American students who go and take science majors or American professors that claim to be Christians and yet teach their science classes without acknowledging God and worshiping God and acknowledging God's law and encouraging their students to submit to God's laws as they create their science. This, my friends, is essential. The beginning of wisdom and knowledge in classrooms has got to be the fear of God. And if we don't bring a reformation and renaissance in the area of the fear of God in education, then we are contributing to the demise. We are the ones contributing to the destruction of our society. And we are the ones who are leading in the major sin of the day. So educators are primarily responsible for the decline of the nation. Educators are primarily responsible for the major sins of this nation. If they refuse to acknowledge Proverbs 1:7, whether it be in the homeschool movement, whether it be in the Christian school movement, or in the public school movement, or in the universities. If the Christian colleges will not acknowledge the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge in those biology classrooms, then they need to go out of business today. And they need to absolve themselves of the guilt of teaching a science that is not based in the fear of God. This is fundamental, Steve, to me. This is fundamental. Why? Because the fear of God is taught as the fundamental in Hebrews chapter 12, Proverbs 1, Proverbs 9, 6, and Ecclesiastes 12. Let's hear the whole end of the matter. It is to fear God and keep his commandments. If they're not bringing that fundamental into their work as educators, they need to go do something else. They need to grow apples and sell them on the side of the road. They need to clean houses for a living. I'm serious about this. I think the undermining of science and technology by refusing to teach the beginning of knowledge is the fear of God is going to bring about something of the destruction of our society as we know it.
So let's say that there's a parent out there that's listening to this and they've got a son or a daughter that is addicted to their phone. What do you do about it now? Where do you go?
Well, the first thing you do is cry out to God for his salvation, because addiction is a problem. Addiction is a problem of idolatry. Addiction is giving into the internal lusts. Paul says in Romans chapter 14, and he says the same thing in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that we are to come under the control of nothing. We are not to be under the control of those things. He says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will be dominated by none of it. Food is meant for the stomach for food, and God will destroy both one and the other. Christians refuse to come under the bondage of any kind of addiction because we are the servants of Jesus. Now, the ungodly are dead meat to the addictions, but Christians ought not to be. But we have to be on our guard as well. We need to ask ourselves, is there something that's creeping up on us? I think we've all probably had some kind of an addiction creep up onto us. And the best way to get the handle over it and to mortify that sinful lust is to go into a media fast. So I would challenge a Christian family to go through a media fast themselves and just cut off all media for 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 3 months or 6 months. I think we did it for 3 months once. That's good for any kind of an addiction. Just go through a fast and then use that fast as an opportunity to re-engage relationships. First, your relationship with God and then your relationship with others. And I think that would be a beautiful thing for families. To go through that kind of thing. The tendency is always to blame the companies or to blame the system or to blame the environment for these sorts of things. Here's one of the quotes. These companies are hijacking our psychological vulnerabilities. Well, again, blame the system. It's fun to blame the system. The psychological manipulation of powerful systems is only one component, though. So again, you know, yes, the systems take their responsibility for doing their best to manipulate the psychological vulnerabilities of the teens. But the problem is worse than that. The problem is that modern man has turned away from God. He's killed relationships. He's killed 80 million babies. That didn't help.
Yeah.
So again, the love of many has grown cold, really, really cold. So acknowledge first that relationships have grown very, very cold, ice cold. So that's the first thing I think to do is go to the foundation. Why are we so quick to give in to the derelationalized forms in the e-universe? And the answer is that the modern man has escaped reality. He's escaping God. He's escaping relationship. And how do you get a billion people addicted to Facebook? That's a perfect storm. A worldview that's become more self-conscious to the meaninglessness of life. There's boys that have not been trained to work. There's a market that's abandoned relationship, disenfranchised with family life, with marriage, with children, with their friends, family relationships that didn't really exist to begin with. So pseudo-relationships take over. And then there's the market that's looking for an escape that isn't alcohol and drugs, because everybody knows alcohol and drugs have a bad name. And so the escape into social media and games and e-escapes do not have as bad of a name yet. And so I think what happens is some of the escape routes that people used to take through the previous generations no longer avail themselves. You know, nobody really likes to be a drunk, but they escape into other forms, including the e-forms. So I think that's what's happened. You have a perfect storm of this worldview, this epistemology that is self-conscious now of the meaninglessness of all of life. That has been inculcated big time through music and through philosophies that have been taught through humanism over the last 80 to 90 years. And so you've got a worldview that is pretty well ingrained now into the zeitgeist that is self-conscious of the meaninglessness of life. Boys don't want to work. The market has abandoned relationship. And then there's a market that's looking for escape. So all of that produces a market. Dr. Fogg steps in and says, here, let me help you. And at the same time, make a few companies very, very rich. And then what happens?
The money
flows.
Yes, it does.
And flows.
So you follow the money. Yep. And if you're making a lot of money, you want to keep doing what you're doing.
You know, it's interesting. Even Dr. Fogg are saying, yeah, I think this stuff really destroys relationships. He says that.
But I'm rich.
He says, I look at some of my former students. I wonder if they're really trying to make the world better or just make money. Let me guess.
I'm thinking make money.
He says, you look around the restaurants and pretty much everyone has their phone on the table and they're just being constantly drawn away from the live face-to-face interaction. I do think that's a bad thing. So, you know, Dr. Fogg is finally admitting that we're all kind of in the fog.
Yeah.
Now. So how do you solve these societal problems? And that's the question here. Well, I think you need repentance. That is, you need a whole shift of worldview. We need to embrace relationships. We need to acknowledge God. We need to fall on our face and say, God, we have not loved you with our heart, soul, mind, and strength as we should. We haven't embraced relationships in the body. We've church hopped. We haven't resolved conflicts. We don't really forgive each other. But now if we embrace relationships and we begin to resolve conflicts, we forgive each other, we learn to love each other, while we open up new relational situations for our families and churches, we open up our homes every Sunday or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for hospitality, where people mess up our houses and eat all of our food. You know, that's what I'm talking about here. Is do just the opposite of what Facebook does. Do just the opposite. Offend everything that Facebook has ever come up with in their e-relationships. Go out and like people. But really like them. Like them in the most radical way you can possibly like them. And that is invite them over, give up yourselves for them, sacrifice yourself, sacrifice your time, sacrifice your money for others, sacrifice your attention first and foremost. That's the toughest thing for most kids sitting in restaurants. Sacrifice a little attention. Sacrifice some of your brain cells to take an interest in somebody else's life. Sacrifice of yourself. Love endures all things. We don't throw away old friendships. No, 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 no. We maintain all of our old friendships, every single one of them. We maintain them. Go back to some of your old friendships. Go back.
give them a call, email them, establish new contacts, meet them for coffee somewhere. Don't throw away your old relationships. Go back, recycle old relationships, and then have hundreds of people over to your house on any given week, and throw away your electronics if necessary. Throw away your electronics. Christians don't submit to the bondage of the world. No, 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 no. We're not going to let the pseudo-world, the matrix, the world of avatars and fake relationships displace the real world. No, no, no. We don't want to escape the relationship with God, the reality of the true and living God, and our relationship with the covenant people of God in relationship to God. No, no, no. We're going to meet on a Sunday. We're going to make it to church on time on a Sunday, even maybe half an hour earlier so we can reconnect with people in the foyer of the church. Then we're going to hang out about 2 hours afterwards and have a little fellowship. And then maybe we'll have them over for dinner all afternoon. And then maybe that'll drag into the Sunday evening service. And then we're going to be up till 10 or 11 o'clock at night fellowshipping with the brothers and sisters in the church long enough for to get into a conflict with each other so that we can forgive each other and restore relationship before we go to bed.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Ready, break. Friends, that's the worldview that is just the opposite of the derelationalized worldview of the postmodern. And I recommend it to you. Absolutely. Well, as we consider the use of these entertainment devices, these e-devices, be sure to get a copy of my book, The Tattoo Jesus. The real Jesus would do with all this pop culture. What would he do with all of it? Well, I address that in The Tattoo Jesus, what the real Jesus would do with pop culture, and I get down to the fundamental worldview issues upon which all of this e-stuff is built, upon which most of our movies and music is established. You know, I got to ask yourself, what's the worldview, what's the social view that is communicated through all of these powerful new entertainment and electronic devices in the modern age? Ask those questions, please, please, please do not be naive as you enter into the modern world of entertainment and electronic devices. Get a copy of The Tattoo Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Do with Pop Culture, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. And as we wrap up this edition of the Generations broadcast, may I remind you one more time, we are in the midst of our fundraising month to keep this program on the air for one more year. And we simply ask that maybe 100 of you would be willing to provide $10 a month or $20 a month or $100 a month to keep this program on the air. If this program has been beneficial to you, just encourage you to provide a little sustenance for the program, and this will keep us going for one more year. All you need to do is go to our website, generations.org, and click on Give Today to provide one more aid to our radio program. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for you.